listening to Inside the World Economic Forum. I'm Michelle Mishler.
And I'm Mike Hanley. It's Thursday, November the 17th. And to kick things off today, we thought we'd introduce ourselves. I'm the editorial director here at the World Economic Forum, which means it's my job to get a handle on all of the various projects, initiatives and events and things and communicate them in a way that's easy and absorbable by the outside world. And also to make sure that we pitch all of our materials at the right level for the world's top economists, that we get the right message together for government officials, and just to keep a hand on everything that we publish.
You have busy days, absolutely.
I have busy days, indeed.
I'm a former journalist and now a senior manager here at the Forum. I look after all that is Swiss media related, as I am Swiss and I speak the language as required. And I also put together this podcast.
In today's show, we learn a little bit about energy architecture, what it is, and why we need a new one.
And Sushant Palakrishi Rao is back from India and gives us a wrap-up of the India Economic Summit.
And we hear from our head of environment what he believes are some of the most pressing environmental risks facing us today.
But first, here's Espen Mellem. He's an associate director and head of electricity industry. And we started by asking him what exactly energy architecture is.
Energy architecture is about our energy systems. They are very complex systems, and they involve a lot of infrastructure to actually bring energy from the source to the end consumer. We're talking about transmission infrastructure, we're talking about energy generation infrastructure, and we're talking about the infrastructure for consumers to consume energy. But we're also talking about the consumers and the policymakers and the business that are involved in actually shaping this energy system. The energy architecture is all of that.
So why a new one? Why do we need a new energy architecture?
The energy architecture hasn't changed very much for the last decades. It's basically hasn't needed to change, but with all that is happening today, think about the climate change issues, think about the energy security issues, think about the new economic growth that is driving a lot of demand in the energy sector. All of this is putting a lot of stress on the energy systems, and they need to be upgraded. They need to fit also new needs. The new energy architecture is a recognition that we need to move from A to B, from where it is today to where it needs to be tomorrow. That's not easy.
And why is the Forum looking at this?
The Forum is looking at this because it's a very important issue for the energy future overall. And it's a very important issue for our partners, for the governments and other stakeholders that are involved in this. The Forum is offering a neutral multi-stakeholder platform for actually looking at this. We're creating a new methodology to think about how energy architectures can be created in a holistic manner to both support economic growth, needs for sustainability, but also at the same time energy security needs. And of course the needs are different by countries, but there are also a lot of similarities.
And which stakeholders do you involve in your work?
We work very closely with a number of partner companies from the energy sector, but also from other related sectors. We also have a group of experts called the Global Agenda Council on New Energy Architecture, which is providing thought leadership into this space. And of course, we work with governments. This project was started in Davos last January. We report its preliminary findings to next Davos, and we will publish the findings next spring.
That was Espen Mellem, Associate Director and Head of Electricity Industry here at the World Economic Forum. Now let's turn to our what-if scenario. Every so often we'll bring you an expert's view of what the biggest global risks are in their field of expertise. Today we hear from Dominic Warray. He's a Senior Director at the World Economic Forum and the Head of Environmental Initiatives. Here is what he had to say about what keeps him awake at night.
I would suggest that one of the most underappreciated risks is the issue of scarcity. Now, one can take that a number of ways, but let me start with the natural resource piece to this. I'm not suggesting a kind of limit to growth scarcity here. I'm suggesting that in our current macroeconomic circumstances, we're facing a change in how we have to view our understanding of what macroeconomics means. traditionally 19th century, 20th century, it was the search for the accumulation of capital, and we assumed that we had an unlimited supply curve of environmental goods and services. What we are witnessing at the turn of the 21st century is actually we've accumulated significant pockets of capital around the world, sovereign wealth funds, pension funds, some high net worth individuals even. And yet in the continued search for the accumulation of capital for businesses and for countries, we're just starting to nudge against a constraint in our environmental goods and services, whether the assets that we can take out of the ground or assumption about what we can pollute into the atmosphere or water. I don't need to go into all of the myriad of statistics around that, but in terms of the risk is in that shift, in that adjustment to scarcity. We do not have the international arrangements in terms of our macroeconomic thinking about how to deal with a downward supply curve of environmental goods and services. We don't have yet a consistent approach to innovation, either technological, policy, or collaboration between businesses, business and government, to deal with these new forcing factors of scarcity. And what we are seeing is a spotty response, which will gradually accelerate over the next 2 or 3 decades, of businesses, countries, or institutions and other forms of arrangement dealing with that scarcity problem. And if we go into some depth on that, there are a number of example areas, but the response to scarcity in terms of sustaining equitable economic growth to me is one of the biggest risks that we face when we seem under-equipped at the moment to deal with through our international arrangements.
And that was the World Economic Forum's Dominic Walray. Finally, Sushant Palakirti Rao is back from India, as we said. We sat down with him this morning, and he told us how things went at the India Economic Summit.
Well, I'll tell you what, Michelle. I think that for a global environment which is characterized right now by a lot of anxiety, a lot of concern with what's happening in the Eurozone and unemployment rates in a lot of the industrialized world, we really tapped into the entrepreneurial spirit and energy and dynamism of the city of Mumbai, where we had our first India Economic Summit after 26 years of being in New Delhi. And I was so happy to see that sessions from the beginning until the end were packed. And the kinds of discussions we had were very frank, very open. They engaged the audience. So it was one of the most enthusiastic summits I've ever seen in my 6 years at the forum.
So do you think maybe the change of location had a little bit to do with it, to kind of infuse it with some energy, some new energy?
I think so, for sure. I mean, it gave new impulses to the discussions, but also because the participation was unique in that we focused somewhat more on the state leadership versus the center leadership. And I'll never forget the words of the moderator when we had a session convening together several chief ministers from India and the premier of British Columbia, and he asked the Indian chief minister, how often is it that you actually come together like this? And they were a bit astounded by the question, because it doesn't happen so much. So I feel it was very unique for the forum to have brought together the state leaders of India.
What are some of the highlights of this India Economic Summit for you?
Well, let me build on that point about state leaders. If you just take Maharashtra, the state in which our summit took place, as an example, it has the population equivalent to that of Mexico. It's the second largest state in India. The first largest state in India before it has a population equivalent to Brazil. So if you took Maharashtra as a G20 economy, it would rank somewhere between 10 and 11. So it gives you an idea of the magnitude of the states. And for me, therefore, it was a highlight to have brought the focus to a state level, because many of the participants repeated throughout the conversations that there are a set of challenges, but they see implementation happening at a local level and at a state level. And in the closing plenary session, that word localization came up from several different industry sectors, as well as the co-chair from Transparency International, who was speaking on behalf of civil society, that national policies might have been articulated. Now is the time for those policies to be implemented at the ground level.
Do you feel that more can be done when it comes from the ground up?
Absolutely. And I think what our summit did this year was to underline that coming from the ground up means you have to engage all stakeholders from society. And our multi-stakeholder concept of the World Economic Forum was well underlined at the meeting. We honored for the 6th year in a row the Indian Social Entrepreneur of the Year, and the kinds of works that the finalists are doing at the ground level is just remarkable. It can be viewed on our website. Number two, we had a very significant representation of young global leaders, but not just Indian young global leaders. They were from Nepal, from Bangladesh and Pakistan, and gave a perspective of how they see leadership not only in India, but in the region going forward, and how they want to work together with the neighboring countries for a peaceful, prosperous future for all of them. And how often, again, do you see young leaders from Pakistan and India sitting together, committing to a future of progress for both states? And then finally, I think what really was energetic, if I talk about the energy of the city, was the fact that we launched the 3 hubs for our global shapers, which are 20 to 30-year-old individuals, very committed to change in their societies, in their communities, in their organizations. These are the leaders of the future. We had 12 of them at the summit. And if you could just see the kinds of amazing things they're doing, whether in entrepreneurship, there was one woman, 24 years of age, who's working in the slums of Mumbai. And I drew a lot of inspiration, as well as the other participants, from these amazing stories of hope and dedication, which I felt left in the end for the meeting a positive feeling that we can work through these challenges. And India might be a large country. Mm-hmm. You have to multiply in a country like India those challenges by a billion, but it's also a place of a lot of talent, capabilities and optimism, so a lot can be done.
So what do you take from this looking forward to next year?
Well, next year we'll go back to New Delhi. I think we have a lot of actions and recommendations which we made in the closing plenary session to a member of the Planning Commission. And we'll look forward to now seeing, as the winter session of Parliament will begin next week, have these gone through? And if not, what are the next steps to ensure that India gets to where it should be?
That was Sushant Palakorti Rao, Senior Director and Head of Asia. And that's it for our second edition of Inside the World Economic Forum. I'm Michael Hanley.
And I'm Michelle Mishler. Join us again next week when we discuss corruption and find out exactly what it takes to be a social entrepreneur.